Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to tonight's program. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We'll try the video stream again in a minute. What do we got? McChrystal, this is relatively new news. Army General Stanley McChrystal told the Army today that he, surprise, surprise, intends to retire. The decision, according to McClatchy newspapers, in fact, wasn't a surprise, because McChrystal was unlikely to have received another appointment after being cashiered. And, you know, about the derogatory comments he allowed his staff to make to a Rolling Stone reporter about the president and key administration figures, yada, 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 yada. In choosing to retire, McChrystal is not following the lead of his predecessor, David McKiernan. Obama fired McKiernan last May when he nominated McChrystal. McKiernan retired at the lesser rank of lieutenant general 2 months after his dismissal. And Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded U.S. troops in Iraq during the Abu Ghraib scandal, was dismissed in 2004, but continued in the Army for 2 more years. Goodbye, Stanley. I'm sure there's a nice job waiting for you with DynCorp or Triple Canopy or XE. Creep bastards. My goodness. Representative Nita Lowy of New York has done something rather interesting. She has decided to chop money out of supplementals going to Afghanistan. She said today she's cutting billions of dollars in aid to Afghanistan from spending legislation because she is outraged over reports of corruption and aid being flown out of the country. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's see how quickly the right-wingers, especially the pigs in right-wing media and the idiots who watch or listen to right-wing media, label Nita Lowy as a traitor. She's a traitor. She heads the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Foreign Aid, and she vowed not to spend, quote, one more dime, end quote, on aid to Afghanistan until she could be sure it is not being abused. Well, Representative Lowy, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to go along with the Republican nonsense and the Obama nonsense, send billions, trillions of dollars. Keep it going. I mean, my God, what are you doing, Nita? This is the lifeblood of America. Funding military operations so 40% of it can be stolen. That's the way it works. She also announced hearings on corruption in Afghanistan. Oh, yeah? Well, that should be interesting. An aide to Representative Lowy said the Obama administration requested $4 billion for the accounts affected in the fiscal 2011 foreign aid appropriations bill before Lowy's committee. She said that she would only leave the life-saving humanitarian aid in the bill. Her committee will consider it on Wednesday. Now, Representative Lowy acted apparently after a Wall Street Journal report. This is according to McClatchy. This is according to Reuters news agency. She reacted after a Wall Street Journal report today said more than $3 billion in cash had been flown out of Kabul airport in the past 3 years. And that U.S. investigators think some of the money being flown out to safe havens is diverted U.S. aid. Oh, you think? Of course, there's probably an awful lot of opium poppy money there, too, but, well, you can't tell one from the other, not really. On the same day, today, a report in the Washington Post said that top officials in this thug Hamid Karzai's government have repeatedly derailed corrupt investigations of politically connected Afghans. Well, of course, they don't want investigations. I mean, Hamid Karzai's brother is an opium dealer. Come on! And he works for the CIA. Lowy said, quote, the alleged shipment of billions in donor funds out of Afghanistan and allegations of Afghan government insiders impeding corruption investigations are outrageous. I do not intend to appropriate one more dime for assistance to Afghanistan until I have confidence that U.S. taxpayer money is not being abused to line the pockets of corrupt Afghan government officials, drug lords, and terrorists. End quote. Well, you left out Republicans back in the United States and people who work for Dick Cheney. Did he survive? Did they send him home again? Oh, my God. Okay. I guess we'll have to put our candles out. Since he did walk out of there again, I guess. Anyway, Nita Lowy said she would have hearings after Congress's recess next week to get to the bottom of corruption allegations in Afghanistan. So the government that we ostensibly support refuses to allow corruption investigations into well-placed Afghans because it would lead to well-placed Americans. And, you know, nobody wants to derail the gravy train, least of all some two-bit thug like Hamid Karzai, who doesn't want us there. I don't know why we're there. He's cutting a deal with the Pakistanis to kind of declare a truce and let the Taliban operate in the outlying areas and keep the cities as cosmopolitan as they are now. I mean, that's all they want. They don't want Americans. Get out of here. In the meantime, though, I wonder how many more American soldiers have to die. I wonder how many more American soldiers have to have half their brains shot out of their skulls. I wonder how many of these scummy right-wingers in American radio and television will continue to pretend like there is some reason for our being in Afghanistan, although every one of them are chicken hawks to the nth degree, with great big chicken feathers growing out their butts. It just never stops, folks. It never stops. So, Nita Lowy, right on. Good for you. Glad to hear you're going to say no more money into the funnel of corruption, death, and destruction in a war, an occupation, invasion we have no business being in. Again, let's see how long it is before right-wing vermin on American radio and television begin to attack Nita Lowy. They probably did today, but if not, how about no later than noon tomorrow Eastern time? Ah, what do you think? You think? Oy. What else we got? Oh, Haley Barbour. Did you see Haley? A couple of weeks ago, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour encouraged people to come visit the state because oil's not going to be a threat. This is going to be a minimal thing. Barbour said back then, Mississippi Gulf Coast open for business. Enjoy the beach and pay a little sales tax right here. 3 weeks ago, Barbour said the spill was no big deal and that the real damage was being caused by media coverage of the spill. He said back then, truth is, we have virtually no oil. If you're on Mississippi Gulf Coast anytime in the last 48 days, you didn't see no oil at all. We've had a few tar balls, but we have tar balls every year. It's a natural product of the Gulf of Mexico. 250,000 to 750,000 barrels of oil seep in the Gulf of Mexico through the floor every year. So tar balls are no big deal. The biggest impact for us has been the news coverage. So what is Mississippi's addled grit stuffed in his mouth Mississippi governor say now that oil is at Mississippi shoreline? Well, naturally, he says the problem is that the federal government isn't doing enough to stop it. He said, quote, we continue to press federal United Command and BP to increase the amount of resource available to tackle oil, begin as far south possible through the passes into the sound in the mouths of the bays. While command and control of on-water resources has improved, it must get much better. That's what he said. He did. I swear to God he did. We'll be right back. Mississippi, huh? I'll be back.
better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. So where was Haley Barbour as these great big globs of oil, this significant flow of oil onto Mississippi's barrier islands this week? Well, he was partying up in Washington, D.C., trying to raise money once again for Republicans. You know, Haley Barbour, he got a deal with the Chinese several years ago. Of course, you know, the, quote, investigation, end quote, never really turned anything up, but everybody pretty much knew that old Haley Barbour was stealing money hand over fist and stuffing it in his pockets, in his ears, in his pants cuffs. But I digress. So he was up in D.C. Trying to raise more money for Republicans. And that was on Thursday. This is what it says. On Thursday, he held a Washington fundraiser for Republican Governors Association, which he heads. And from one of his political action committees, he's got a whole bunch of them, which is raising money for GOP congressional candidates. Yes, sir. Barbour told reporters when questioned about the oil slopping up against Mississippi, Barbour said, well, quote, the most important thing right now is the 2010 elections. Unquote. He said on Friday after he went back to Mississippi that major slicks miles long within the Mississippi Sound, quote, that shouldn't be cause for any alarm. And by Saturday, there were long, wide ribbons of orange-colored oil as far as the eye could see, and acres of both heavy and light sheen moving into the sound between the barrier islands. Maybe I'll tell you what. Really? Well, he declared today in Mississippi a day of prayer. Quote, to remember the Mississippi Gulf Coast. God, don't forget us down here. You know, I'm making money hand over kidney stone, but don't forget, we down us here, down here, God, or whom am I praying to? Oh, Jesus. Is it to Jesus or to God? It's to God. All right. God, you remember the Mississippi Gulf Coast. God, come on, cut us a little slack here. All right. Okay. Come on. Come on. Be a sport, God. Be a good God. Come on. Just be a sport. Don't be a creep. Come on, God. Yo! So today was a state day of prayer, quote, to remember Mississippi Gulf Coast. Yeah, well, I think people will remember it, Haley, for a number of reasons, none of which have anything to do with you and your corruption. But I think people will remember it because it's such a little bitty area. You know, Mississippi Gulf Coast is a little old bitty piece that sits down there in Mississippi. And you couldn't even acknowledge the trouble was coming there, could you? Could you, Haley, huh? Just keep that money coming in them casinos down there in all those old Mississippi Gulf Coast towns, right? Man, I hate these people. I really do. Cheney made it out alive again? Did he make it out alive? Did he? Oh, my God. I wonder what unborn babies they separated from their mothers to feed him so he could get out again. I can't believe that. Dick Cheney. Again, if you missed it, he's asking the Kenyan in the White House to give him some more money to fight the oil. Oil was found in at least two areas on Mississippi shoreline in Jackson County. Yeah, we got a lot of up here at St. Andrews Beach and at the Lake Mars Pier and Gulf Park Estate. So we're going to ask the Kenyan up there in Washington to give us a little more money. We need some more money. We're just trying to fight this thing, you know, this oil. The only reason there's oil out there is because, you know, them crazy environmentalists made people go out 35, 80, 90 miles out there to dig. That's why. But the oil is coming up here on our shoreline now. We need some money to fight the oil. And I ain't giving no money. I'm a governor of Mississippi. The only people make it down here are a little group of us white folks. Ain't no money in the treasury here. No, we're about broke. But the oil is coming. So we need some help from that Kenyan, from Mr. President. Oh, Lord, I choke every time I say that. From Mr. President up on the White House to stop the oil. In the meantime, let's everybody pray. We can get some of them folks in the Delta to pray. Some of our black brothers and sisters, right? Hey, black brothers and sisters. Yeah, Haley. You gonna pray? Yes, sir. Good boy. Good boy. Cause you know why? Why, Governor? The oil is coming. That's why. We got oil coming up here. Yes, you know you got to get right with God.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. From Prairie 2, the Depression with No Name. I don't know if you read Krugman's column today in the New York Times, but he makes reference to a third depression. The Long Depression was the one that occurred towards the end of the 19th century, 1870s, I believe. And then we had the Great Depression, the 30s that your grandparents remember. And now we're in this one. Barry too writes, the G20 is over and President Obama is trying hard to put on a brave face. No decisions are ever really made at these meetings. So the announcement that the G19, that's everybody but the United States, is going to plunge headlong into fiscal conservatism, just like Herbert Hoover, was well thought out ahead of time. If Europe is serious about austerity, this would be bad news for the U.S. in several ways. Much of what the United States exports is made by European companies that own a large portion of the remaining manufacturing in the United States, and they will be cutting jobs here. A decline in Europe would also be a big setback for China, who exports more to Europe than they do to the U.S., and this would make China even less likely to revalue their currency in favor of the United States. They're already hinting that there would be no movement. There's even wild talk that the yuan could go the other way if allowed to float. Although President Obama all but pleaded with the Europeans to keep spending, he sent home a completely different message. He said it'll be put up or shut up time on cutting deficits soon enough, saying yesterday that he would deliver serious deficit reduction proposals next year. And when he does, those politicians who talk tough on debt simply to score votes will have to show their hand. He said, Obama said, quote, when I start presenting some very difficult choices to the country, I hope some of these folks who are hollering about deficits and debt step up, because I'm calling their bluff, end quote. So there you have it. The Europeans are afraid to spend money to keep the economy going, and Obama's determined to slash the budget here even more. Does the ghost of Herbert Hoover visit Obama at night, dragging his chains with the spirit of depression's past? Or does Obama sleep the dreamless sleep of the truly clueless? Stock market fell today on news that although consumer spending was up more than predicted, it was not up by as much as a rise in income, which signals increased savings due to consumer caution, or maybe they're simply paying down debt. It could also be that the numbers are wrong or otherwise meaningless in the long term, which is so often the case these days. The real numbers that do affect the economy in this Neo-Hoover era are these. Congress has cut off unemployment for millions of people who have been unemployed for a long term already. Add to that an increasing number of people who had exceeded the 99 weeks maximum that had been allowed already, and millions more, a full third of the unemployed, who were denied eligibility to begin with. Congress, in keeping with the fashion of austerity, has denied aid to cities and states. They can't meet payroll as local revenue collapses. Increased savings only cut into the possibility of recovery, and this applies pressure to cause even more job losses in an economy that has continued to lose jobs right along. And now millions will be plunged into poverty as the prospect of ever getting another job evaporates, putting even more strain on government services that couldn't cover their budgets already. Paul Krugman's column today dealt with his view that we are entering the third American Depression. His opinion is that this one will more resemble the historic Long Depression of the 1870s as opposed to the severity of the Great Depression of the 1930s. I personally think Krugman is an optimist. In past depressions, much of the economy was able to operate on at least a subsistence level, even if no meaningful social safety net existed. But America today is a hollow shell, supported by sheets of tissue paper, and we import the paper from China. 80 years ago, 60% of the country could feed itself. Today, that number is near zero. The factory at the edge of town might have been closed, but it was still there waiting to be reopened. That's not the case today. The shock of waking up in a country where most people not only don't know where their next meal is coming from, but have no idea how that will ever change, can cause things to get out of hand very quickly. The depression of the 21st century will likely be great and may go on so long as to not be remembered with a name. Prairie2.com. I think that's the longest missive from Prairie 2 we've ever gotten, but the point is well taken. Again, the news is not the least bit good, and yet somehow we, I mean, everybody is just continuing to chunk along like nothing hideous is about to happen. I was reading something the other day that, I think somebody was over at the house and we were talking about this. There are a bunch of resets that are coming, you know, mortgage resets that were taken out 5 and 10 years ago. And especially the ones that were taken out 5 years ago, you know, the initial mortgages are going to reset now up to a much higher level. And yet, these big companies that own, these are commercial mortgages. These big companies that own these huge empty shopping malls, empty office complexes, empty, small, business complexes. You see them on the outskirts of any town. There's no business being conducted in those buildings. In the buildings, the notes are going to reset at a higher interest level. There's going to be an awful lot of default going on. And who do you think is going to pay for the default? Oh, that's right, the Chinese. At the same time, we are going to have another wave of home mortgages reset. Mortgages that were taken out 5 years ago, 2005. This is before the scam perpetrated on us by these huge commercial banking ventures was revealed to be the scam that it turned out to be. So what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? Nah, I don't want to think about it either. There were a couple of rulings today at the Supreme Court. One of which is just an absolute knee slapper. Supreme Court effectively ruled today that every single attempt by cities or states to ban handguns or any type of weaponry is illegal. Gun control, all gun control laws were ended today. Now, the case was Chicago's. The city of Chicago said you're not going to own a handgun, yet the city of Chicago's on a murder spree. And the case was brought by a man who wanted to own a handgun in his house because he feared the thugs in his neighborhood and the crime in his neighborhood. So it was his case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and a ruling today, 5-4, of course. And this, it's almost exactly 2 years after the court first ruled that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to own guns in the District of Columbia, another 5-4 decision. But that case only addressed federal laws. It left open the question of whether Second Amendment rights, so-called, protect gun owners from laws passed by state and local governments. And Sammy the Fish Alito, writing for the majority, said that the right to self-defense, protected by the Second Amendment, is fundamental to the American conception of ordered liberty. Like other provisions of the Bill of Rights that set out such fundamental protection, he said, the Second Amendment must be applied to limit not only federal power, but also that of state and local governments. Ta-da! Yes, we must strike down tyranny! Where was all this stuff during 8 years of neo-Nazism under Bush and Cheney? Where was all this stuff? I mean, back at the genesis of this, that would be the Reagan years. Where were all you gun, rabid gun hounds in your fear of the imperial government when the government was acting imperial? Oh, that's right. I forgot. We had white guys in the White House then. That's why they called the White House, right? They don't call it the Kenyan House. No, or the black man's house. And according to the Times, in more than 200 pages of opinions, the court did not even decide the constitutionality of the two gun control laws that were at issue in the case, one from Chicago and one from Oak Park, Illinois. It's just astonishing. But the games are only about to begin. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You know, with all those Catholics on the Supreme Court, you would think that another ruling that came from the justices today would not have happened. The court allows today, in a decision, a Catholic Church sexual abuse scandal to go forward. There was an appeal from the Vatican to dismiss this case. And it was based on something called the Foreign Sovereign Immunity Act. Now, the genius in this case, Bridget writes, is that it's not against the local diocese, it's like Boston, it's against the Vatican. That means as the case goes forward, there will be discovery, depositions, etc., required from the Vatican itself, which will finally establish the Church's role in this sexual predation and abuse against kids. The person who filed the original case is also excited. He says they'll still fight every step of the way, even to get to the trial, but this is a major victory. And as the AP reported it a couple hours ago, the Minnesota attorney who represents the plaintiff said, quote, I've known for 25 years that all roads lead to Rome. This is the beginning for us of a new journey, a uniquely difficult odyssey, end quote. Now, this attorney has represented hundreds of abuse victims and has tried for years to sue the Vatican. And he said he had hoped to persuade a judge that he should be allowed to depose Vatican officials. The American attorney for the Vatican argued the Vatican is not responsible for individual priests in dioceses, saying the existence of the priest in each individual case was unknown to the Holy See until after all the events in question. Oh, hogsnot. I mean, come on. You know, let's face it, the Roman Catholic Church is the, to them anyway, the established church on earth. And the Pope of Rome is the vicar of Christ. He has direct communication to Christ, according to these people. He is the first among everybody. He is yada, 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 yada. So it kind of staggers the imagination to think that at no time in the past, 1,300 years that Jesus didn't, you know, whisper into one of these crazy-looking popes and say, psst, yo, Leo, guess what? Those priests, they're buggering all these children. Yeah, Jesus wouldn't do that because apparently Jesus is in on the conspiracy. Even though Jesus said, you mess with the kids, the innocence of children, and I'm going to cut your heads off and throw them into hell so the demons can play soccer. Well, okay, he didn't say that exactly, but that's pretty much what he meant, I think, right? Eh? Even though the Bible has strong admonitions against, I'm talking about the New Testament. The Old Testament, oh, kill the kids. They talk snotty to you, take them to the backyard and cut their throats. That's all. But the New Testament, you know, the Jesus part. The little children. Suffer, blah, blah, blah. But in all these centuries, Jesus never said to any of these popes while they were hamana, 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 hey, listen, you got to do something about the priests that are buggering and molesting children. Nah, not once. Never happened. And consequently, the Vatican's defense in this particular case was, we didn't know. What do we know? I don't know. What do we know? What? You, what? Somebody's been messing with you. You're kidding. With children? Oh. Even though the reports, of course, have been coming in for centuries. But the way to handle those reports, just, you know, move the priests around a little bit. If you know, if the priest all of a sudden develops a special attachment to the children in, say, oh, I don't know, Sheboygan, Michigan, well, get him out of there. Send him to Bowling Green, Kentucky. Yeah, but there's kids there, too. Well, yeah, there are, but... So anyway, I'm surprised. How many, what do we have on the Supreme Court? Six Catholics and three Jews, if Kagan is confirmed. Is that it? Six Catholics and three Jews? I don't know why I'm laughing. But with six Catholics, I just find, old Uncle Clarence, he's a Catholic. He converted. Yeah, he converted. So we have, or is he Jewish? No, Uncle Clarence is Catholic, right? So, here we have six Catholics who are saying, go ahead, sue the bastards. Let the case go forward. Go ahead and sue them. I don't know. That's news to me just in and of itself. Did you tell me Cheney was released from the hospital today? You don't have any? Somebody said he's still alive? See, there's proof that prayer's no good. All right, let me see. Uh-oh. All right, you want something to really ruin this hot summer night. Unless you're where? Is San Francisco still shivering and shuddering with the cold? I'll tell you what, we could use some of that shivering and shuddering. But I have in my hand here some really, really scary stuff. It came in the form of an email from Danny. So I'd like to share it with you now, but if I did, when we go to this break, you would probably flee. I don't know, you might leave the country, and you wouldn't come back for the next hour of the program. So let's just wait, and when we come back from this break, I'll tell you what it is. All right? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Okay, the scary story, it's from Crooks and Liars in Raw Story, and the AP is trying to confirm this, but I wouldn't expect the AP to blow the cover. U.S. ships massing off Iran coast as Israel prepares to strike. Remember, didn't we mention this Friday? I think I brought this up Friday. I saw it then. The Associated Press is still trying to confirm the following. As unconfirmed reports of an imminent Israeli strike on Iran's nuclear facilities pick up steam in the Middle East media, a U.S.-based strategic intelligence company has released a chart showing U.S. naval carriers massing near Iranian waters. The chart, published by Stratfor, Stratfor, and obtained by the Zero Hedge financial blog, shows that over the last few weeks, a naval carrier, the USS Harry S. Truman, has been positioned in the North Indian Ocean, not far from the Strait of Hormuz, which leads into the Persian Gulf. The carrier joins the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower, which is already located in the area. The chart is dated June 23rd, 5 days ago. Reports of mass movements of Israeli and U.S. naval warships have been circulating through the media for weeks. On June 19th, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported that 12 U.S. and Israeli warships were seen moving through the Suez Canal from the Mediterranean to the Red Sea. And then from Danny, I just read that we are preparing to help Israel strike the nuclear facilities of Iran. There are reportedly two U.S. aircraft carriers in the North Indian Ocean as I am typing this. I can tell you as someone who spent 3 years on the USS Eisenhower that there is never a need for two aircraft carriers in the Indian Ocean, Persian Gulf, unless an attack is imminent. The 80-plus aircraft on each carrier are more than enough to handle most situations that would arise in the region, unless you really want to shock and awe someone into winning their hearts and minds. Are we going to allow the Israeli government pull us into another war? Maybe the drawdown in Iraq and the coming drawdown in Afghanistan is just a way to have troops to send to Iran. I certainly hope this is not the case. Apparently, we've learned nothing from our mistakes in the region. That's from Danny. And then from Mankato, Minnesota, via the Star Tribune, Minneapolis Star Tribune, more than 8 years into fighting two wars, the U.S. military finds itself in an odd but enviable position. All four military branches and all six reserve components reached their recruiting targets, both in quality and quantity, for the first time in the history of the all-volunteer force. Eschewing the cold call and hard sell for what it calls the soft lead, the military is employing the latest in marketing techniques to secure the newest generation of recruits who are plucked from an increasingly select pool of applicants. In a turnaround from as little as 5 years ago, armed forces enlistment requirements have never been higher. William Strickland, a retired Air Force colonel who commanded recruiting in the Western United States, said, quote, "Here you go. There's an awful lot of good kids out there who are coming out of high school with no job prospects, or having trouble affording college, or don't see college as a route for them. That's the prime recruiting market." That's the prime recruiting market. Awful lot of good kids out there, no job prospects, can't afford college, thanks to 8 years of Bush and Cheney. This was the plan, folks. Wow. Well, just a whole new generation of American youth are going to learn what it means to go die for corporate America. No jobs? Hey, come over here, boys and girls. We have jobs. We have lots of jobs. Regarding the Supreme Court, the John Roberts Court, I guess it should be properly titled. Mark in San Francisco writes, "Mike, I listen to you whenever I can here in San Francisco on AM 960, but lately my anger has turned into a deep depression. But I have to say, the Roberts Court is the worst Supreme Court since the rabid racist Taney Court of the 1840s. Alito writes that the Bill of Rights is sacrosanct and the Second Amendment must be preserved, so the gun madness must continue unabated, yet these pigs are okay in destroying the Seventh Amendment, the constitutional right to a jury trial, by supporting arbitration, one of the most perverse gifts given to corporations. The Supreme Court, disgusting, hypocritical liars." Well, just the right-wingers on the court, I would surmise. But aren't the five who are always trying to increase fascism in this country, they're all Catholics, right? Yeah, they're all Catholics. Wow. And Dick writes, "Mike, I'm torn between the desire to have Cheney depart this earthly coil, as you mentioned Friday, in the immediate present, or to do so in front of a firing squad, having been duly charged, tried, and convicted of any or all of his crimes. It's not worth trying to enumerate them all, and thereby sentenced to stand before the concrete wall. Because it has become abundantly obvious that our current president doesn't have the spine to bring about my preferred solution, I guess I fall back to wishing, with you, that he finds some other expeditious means of exit." Yeah. I can't believe he made it out of the hospital again. Oh, my God. What are they doing to this guy? Besides fetal blood, what are they feeding him? What do you keep a vampire, world-class vampire like Dick Cheney, alive with? Well, man. And there's a new Sarah Palin defense fund for you mouth-breathing baggers, if you want to contribute. The administrators of a new legal defense fund set up for Sarah Palin have sent out an email that distorts the outcome. This, according to Associated Press, distorts the outcome of ethics complaints against the half-governor of Alaska and asks supporters to help fight a, quote, vicious campaign, end quote, by her political enemies to ruin her. An ethics investigator said in findings released last Thursday that an earlier fund was illegal, but that the 2008 Republican vice presidential nominee acted in good faith and relied on a team of attorneys to vet the legality. The new Sarah Palin Legal Defense Fund sent out an email calling last week's action a victory for Palin's enemies. Quote, in their vicious campaign to smear, bankrupt, and force this dedicated public servant and conservative leader out of politics, end quote. The money from the first fund is being returned. Go ahead, you bagger freak. Send her money. Yeah. What did she make so far this year? $22 million or something. Send her money for her defense fund. I want to see Sarah Palin president. Yes. Yes, by God. I'm going to vote for Sarah Palin. Who's going to be her running mate? Michelle Bachmann. A giant leap for women's rights. Amen. Today was prayer day in Mississippi. Governor Haley Barbour called on Mississippians to try to get Jesus' ear and try to stop this damn oil. Oil is coming. And there's no doubt about it. It was the myth of fingerprints. That's what that old army post was for. Well, the sun gets bloody and the sun goes down ever since the watermelon. And the lights come up on the black pit town. Somebody said, what's a bad thing to do? Well, it's not just me and it's not just you. This is all around the world. Over the mountains, down in the valley, lives the floor.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Jeff in Salt Lake City says, regarding those recruitment numbers that are up in all the services, just remember our boys on the Malabar front. And the sailors in the floating fortresses. Quick, 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 quick. Right. 1984. The boys on the Malabar front. Endless war. I wonder if when Cheney finally does croak, if they will keep it from us and he will become the big brother head that they show on the screens, on the telescreens. What do you think? Bob in Kentucky writes, regarding Cheney, this guy has to go to the hospital at regular intervals in order to get the transfusion of blood from virgins. Now, I think it's unborn children. Also, Bob writes, am I correct that this comedy known as the confirmation hearings is not necessary? The Constitution does not demand them, only advice and consent to the president. Just a method to keep their faces on the tube so they seem important. Signed, Bob in Kentucky, a nearly bankrupt state. Yeah, you're absolutely right. These hearings are a joke. It is an attempt, I guess, to make Hoy Polloi think that we are actually seeing governance in action. It's stunning. I listen to these old racist bastards like Jeff Sessions, another one of these marble mouth freaks, these white boys from the South. I listened to some of him today. I just decided not to pay a whole lot of attention to this confirmation hearing, because unless they find out that Elena Kagan's boyfriend is a rooster or something, she's going to get confirmed. But this will give the white boys on the Senate Judiciary Committee a chance to really display their anti-woman attitudes, their anti-Semitism, and the audacity of the Kenyan in the White House to nominate somebody to begin with. So, Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour today requested that Mississippians pray. Try to get Jesus' ear about that oil that's off the coast out there. The oil's coming. Oil is all over. He's going to call this Mississippi Prayer Day. You people down there pulling them arms on them electronic one-armed bandits think you're going to win something. Could you stop and pray for just a minute? Get old Jesus' attention there. Stop that gambling. I mean, can you do it for just a minute? You know, I'm sure our Lord and Savior appreciates the fact that you're down there gambling and contributing to the great state of Mississippi, but apparently Jesus is busy today, and we need to get a little attention, get this oil off the coast here. So could y'all stop just pulling those things for just a minute? Doesn't mean anything when you pull it anyway, but could you stop just for a minute and pray? No, you can't do it, huh? All right, I understand. Keep pulling them suckers, because every time you buy some of them are coins, state of Mississippi gets a big old chunk. Oil is out there. There's oil coming. Could you stop your gambling long enough to pray to Jesus? Or was that declaration or proclamation only for the residents of Mississippi? If you're an out-of-stater who just coming down there to spend some of your reverse mortgage money, are you supposed to pray too? No, just the in-staters, just people live there. That's right, because the out-of-staters are going to leave. And then when that wool hits the beach even more, it's not going to bother them, right? Toxic sand, another enemy in Afghanistan. American forces in Afghanistan who already face roadside bombs and insurgent attacks may be dealing with an environmental enemy as well, toxic sand that can damage their brains, according to a recent Navy study. In a presentation on Neurotoxicology Conference in Portland, Oregon earlier this month, so-and-so-and-so-and-so, a senior scientist with the Navy Environmental Health Effects Laboratory, said that dust kicked up in sandstorms contains manganese and other metals. The scientist said, quote, the sand is a risk factor for inducing neurotoxicity. Compounds that are neurotoxic are those that damage the nervous system or the brain. The Navy said the findings are preliminary. So far, no definite link has been found between the inhalation of sand and brain damage. Still, the study followed reports of returning soldiers from Afghanistan and Iraq are experiencing impairments such as memory loss, difficulty concentrating, toxic sand. Come on, let's get those recruitment numbers up. Let's keep that unemployment real high out there and that college tuition way beyond the reach of the average person. Let's get some people in the damn military.
If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. Is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they see with their own eyes. It's amazing. Propaganda. Life is so complex. So.
You're the only one.
get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Locked and loaded? Well, Bruce Enberg, who is obviously listening to the program tonight, writes, Turkey with dressing. He writes, Turkey announced a couple of days ago that they were denying Israel access to its airspace over the murder of their people on that relief ship. If true, this would block Israel from using the bases in Georgia for a sustained air assault on Tehran. Of course, they would need tacit approval of the Russians as they intervened last time by invading. Suddenly, today, 10 Russian agents in the United States are arrested after the FBI had been tracking them for years. Coincidence? No, this is also, this is also the anniversary of the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand. What was he? Was he a Slovenian, a Slovakian, a Croatian, a Yugoslavian? Anyway, the result of which began World War I. Peter writes, Mike, my idea for the ideal Supreme Court justice came out of Norman Lear's head, Archie Bunker. Archie's solution for airline hijacks was, give everybody on board a rod. How is today's Supreme Court ruling any different from that? There's a company from Australia, James Hardie, which also manufactures in this country, that makes concrete siding for houses. Yeah, we have that, don't we, Kathy? We have Hardie siding on our house, don't we? Hardie board? Isn't that what we have? Apparently, spawned by the brush fires in California, we now need them in every neighborhood to slow down the stray bullets. Peter. Yeah, we have that stuff. We have it, on the house. Mike, Dot in Seattle writes, Mike, Dick Cheney wasn't born. He was created by the Terrell Corporation. He's a Nexus 6 replicant. Remember their motto, more human than human, or in Cheney's case, less human than human. Dot in Seattle. Terrell. Blade Runner, right? The L.A.-based, I think it was Blade Runner. From Joe, the only reason that Dick Cheney didn't die at this time is because Senator Byrd died. Cheney was not about to share the limelight with Senator Byrd. He wants all the headlines, pop and parade, and the 21 gun salutes for himself. Now, his handlers found a few more unborn children that Cheney could devour. Hi, Mike. I believe that your negative comments about President Obama are not constructive. For you to say that he has sold out to corporate America is not any more true than saying he has sold out to the poor. Outside the church, just across from my home, is a sign that says, those who throw dirt lose ground. It would not be possible for Barack Obama to continue to serve as president if he were to totally disown large corporate America. We already have one Ralph Nader. We don't need another. Best wishes, Ernie, and his last name, and he says he's on the MLK Jr. West Side Coalition board member and Coffee Club USA in Santa Monica, California. Okay. Rachel Maddow had something to say about it. She managed to debunk the notion that Obama is a swine. Remember what Blue said? That Obama was a swine. This is from her show last Friday. Kay sent this to me. With the passage of financial regulation in Washington today, President Obama took to the very unmomentous setting of Twitters, as he called it yesterday, to say this, quote, last night's House-Senate agreement on Wall Street reform represents the toughest financial reform since the Great Depression, end quote. Turns out that a lot of things that will happen in the less than 2 years of this administration are the biggest or first or most important in generations. On the occasion of the Wall Street reform announcement today, Tegan Goddard at CQ Politics wrote, quote, "Not since FDR has a president done so much to transform this country," end quote. Even before today's historic Wall Street reform agreement, President Obama, of course, did what politicians have been trying to do for more than 60 years. He passed health reform, which for the first time establishes government responsibility for the health care of American citizens. Consider also the stimulus bill. It didn't just throw a lasso around our entire economy and yank it and back from the brink. It also pumped about $100 billion into the crumbling embarrassment of our national infrastructure and transportation system. It was the largest investment in infrastructure since Ike. For solving our country's energy problems, something Obama has compared to man walking on the moon, it contained about $60 billion in spending and tax incentives for renewable and clean energy, also a historic investment. It also included an unheralded but giant investment in science and technology, amping up the budgets at NASA, the National Science Foundation, and an experimental energy research agency that was created under President George W. Bush but never funded until now. President Obama has also expanded state kids' health insurance to cover another 4 million kids. He signed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, amending the 1964 Civil Rights Act for equal pay for equal work. He signed a nuclear arms deal with Russia that would reduce both countries' arsenals by a third. He created a new global non-proliferation initiative to keep nuclear materials out of the hands of terrorists. He set forth an international way forward on that radical left-wing proposition of Ronald Reagan's, a world without nuclear weapons. Then there are the legislative and policy achievements that don't just build on previously set precedents, but set new ones. The Hate Crimes Prevention Act, also known as the Matthew Shepard Act. It had languished in Congress for years. The Food and Drug Administration permitted for the first time to regulate tobacco. Better late than never, he dismantled the scandal-plagued Minerals Management Service, broken into three parts, so that the folks who collect money from oil leases aren't the same ones that regulate the industry. And now we'll actually investigate the industry that it was busy stooping and doing drugs with during the last administration. Obama fired two wartime commanding generals in a little over a year. He overhauled the astonishing stupidity of the student loan system in which banks were being subsidized to give loans that were guaranteed by the government anyway, a license to print money. That was ended in the savings put toward actual aid to students. He canceled a weapons program that was bloated, unnecessary, and totally irrelevant to either of our current wars, the F-22. Why even mention the cancellation of a single weapon system? Because that never happens. Weapons systems never get canceled. The F-22 did, which is itself a miracle. In each of these achievements, and in the list of things he has yet to do, don't ask, don't tell, closing Guantanamo, in each of these things, there's room for liberal disappointment. I sing a bittersweet lullaby to the lost public option when I go to sleep at night. But presidential legacies are complex. Not even the Reagan administration's legacy is pure as the conservative-driven snow. But Tegan Goddard at CQ Politics was right today about nothing this big happening since FDR. The list of legislative accomplishments of this president in half a term, even before energy reform, which he's probably going to get to, is, to quote the vice president, a big effing deal. Love this administration or hate it, this president is getting a lot done. The last time any president did this much in office, booze was illegal. If you believe in policy, if you believe in government that addresses problems, cheers to that. And Kay Petrini sent that to me. I don't know. I usually wander between utterly confused and utterly condemning of this administration. And then so many times I'll catch myself doing that and try to back up a little bit. But I think Rachel Maddow, in what I just shared with you, put it very succinctly last Friday. And Kay had also written to me her own her own take on what it started out because of what our listener from Australia said, Blue. And, you know, that got Kay to thinking. And she wrote me a letter that's a little bit too long to get into right now. But she followed it up with that piece from Rachel. Tell you what, I'll just hold on to this, Kay, and maybe we'll get to it at a later date. Truth is, I think what Kay wrote was a lot more... what, erudite than what Rachel wrote. And I, you know, I love them both, but Kay's just happened to be a little bit better. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. So won't you let me?
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Molloy.
Ten before the hour, when we come back after the next break, we will definitely go to some phone calls. J.J. Jingleheimer Schmidt wrote in again. Mike, John Jacob here. I'm worried sick about the oil spill and the great unknown destruction of ecosystems yet to come. However, another thing has been concerning me lately. I've heard of reports of seven or more U.S. warships on the way to the Persian Gulf. Now, he wrote this Friday. I've also heard about three Dolphin-class subs from Israel just outside Iranian waters. There are quite a few different stories out there, and perhaps I'm just connecting the dots incorrectly. Either way, it's worrying for me. I hope to hear what you think may be going on with this. John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. He sent me a couple of links, one of which we checked out last week. You know, I don't know what to think, what to guess. If I had to make a guess, if I really, really had to make a guess, I would say that my guess would be that, yeah, we're right just an inch away from an all-out assault on Iran, led by Israel and backed up by the United States. I don't think there's any need to kid ourselves anymore that we are not in an era of permanent war. Just as the situation was in Orwell's 1984. You think about the warnings that the Bush crime family issued where it concerned our objective in Iraq. Our objective in Iraq was to invade, occupy, and take over for the multinational oil companies, the easy-to-drill oil in that country, and also to unscrew the Saddam regime that we had inserted into that country. You know, that's a problem with U.S. dictators. We put them in, and then when it's time for them to go, it's time to go, they won't. So we have to do things like we did with Marcos, or name a half a dozen of them in Central America or in the Middle East or in Africa. You know, we put them in, and then the ungrateful bastards just won't leave. You know, when the U.S. says, okay, time to go, we need a new puppet in here. You know, and the puppet just goes, what? Why do you want me to go? Why? What have I done? I'm fine. Like Noriega down in Panama. I mean, this happens all the time. You know, poor Noriega is still trying to figure out what the hell hit him. You know, but I worked for the CIA. Sure you did. No, you thought you worked for the CIA. Oh, my God. But we do this all the time. I mean, come on. Let's not be stupid. I mean, I realize the Republicans and the teabaggers are permanently, terminally stupid. But I'm not talking to you people. You shouldn't be listening to this program anyway. This program will give you diarrhea and gut cramps. So don't listen, right-wingers. And eventually, you will just choke to death on your own saliva when you're asleep at night. Now, normal people, you know, you may listen. But we have done this so many times, you know, when our puppet decides that he's going to cut his strings and start moving, you know, our marionette is going to start moving on his own. You know, we won't have that. Oh, no. So where it concerns Iran, of course, you know, our substituting our guy for the for an Iranian leader goes all the way back to 1953. But actually, when you think about it, it goes back to 1979 when the Iranians finally said enough and they brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to come back and get rid of the Shah. But the Iranian thing, see, the Iranians are showing arrogance, aren't they? Huh? They're just being arrogant. The government of Ahmadinejad and his religious crazy people backers, you know, they're being arrogant. The U.S. and Israel have told Iran to stop with the nuclear weapons already. And the Iranians keep saying they're not nuclear weapons. This is energy. And that's arrogance. You see, answering in a way that does not instantly acquiesce to the United States and or Israel is a form of arrogance. And it must be stopped. Because if Iran isn't stopped, who's going to get arrogant with us next? Georgia? Azerbaijan? Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan. There's oil and gas up there. So the idea is to show the Middle East and Middle Asia that the United States and Israel, well, we may have our little squabbles. There's no daylight between U.S. policy and Israel policy where it concerns the Middle East and so on and so forth. So if I had to guess, I would say that these reports, I'd like to find out what Debka has to say about this, the Israeli intelligence, Debka, I think it's Debka.com, D-E-B-K-A, Debka.com. It might be just a, false flag or a propaganda operation, but the guy who runs it and his daughter are both members of the Israeli intelligence community. And usually what you find at Debka.com is pretty much right on target. So I haven't been there yet. And probably won't go because I'm too scared as it is. So, to answer that question, what do you think, Mike? I think the possibility or probability of an attack on Iran is imminent. We have 100,000 or 120,000, 130,000 troops to the west of Iran and 100,000 troops to the east of Iran and about, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 troops to the north of Iran. Yeah, I think the moment has become propitious. 7 past the hour. Welcome back. Boy, ask and you shall receive. Sheila posted this at Op-Ed News today. I think it was at Op-Ed News. It's from the Debka. Debka.com. Third U.S. carrier and 4,000 Marines augment U.S. Armada opposite Iran. Debka file exclusive report, 28 June 2010. Debka's military sources report that Washington has posted a third carrier opposite Iran's shores. It is supported by amphibious assault ships and up to 4,000 Navy and Marine Corps personnel, bringing the total U.S. strength in these waters to three carriers and 10,000 combat personnel. The USS Nassau, Amphibious Ready Group, 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit, tasked with supporting the Bahrain-based 5th Fleet area of operations, is cruising around the Bab al-Mandeb Straits, where the Gulf of Aden flows into the Red Sea. Its presence there accounts for Tehran's announcing Sunday, yesterday, that its aid ship for Gaza had been called off for fear an American military boarding party would intercept the vessel and search it. The third U.S. carrier group to reach waters around Iran consists of three vessels. The USS Nassau amphibious assault ship is not just an enormous landing craft for the 3,000 Marines aboard it. Its decks carry six vertical takeoff Harrier attack planes, four Super Cobras, 12 Sea Knight and Sea Stallion helicopters, as well as choppers convertible to fast, choppers convertible to fast V-22 Osprey airplanes capable of landing in any conditions. The amphibious transport dock ship USS Mesa Verde, which carries 800 Marines equipped for instantaneous landing, and the amphibious dock landing ship USS Ashland, which carries 400 Marines and 102 commandos, trained for special ops behind enemy lines. It goes on and on and on here. But it doesn't go that much further. So, ask and ye shall receive, right? Regarding Debka file. Some people who keep track of this to a far closer degree than I do or we do, is convinced that Debka file is nothing more than Israeli propaganda intelligence operation. The man who runs it and his, I believe it's his daughter, I don't think it's his sister, I think it's his daughter, they're both Israeli intelligence officers. I don't know if they're active duty or not. I mean, that's how they identify themselves. And in a lot of instances, they're surmising certain events were going to happen have turned out to be just nothing. Smoke. Never happened. Now, whether or not that's because their intelligence was wrong or because the intelligence was canceled because of, I don't know, maybe a change in plans. Who knows? But anyway, there you have it. So some phone calls. Like, Boyd is in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hello, Boyd.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
I try to listen to you every night.
Well, thank you.
And I'll tell you, I go back a lot farther than you do, and it seems to me like studying government when I was growing up, that it was a prohibition against American citizen holding dual citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got a senator from Israel that's in our Senate right now. He pretends he's from Massachusetts. And we've got a number of other senators and congressmen that brag about holding citizenship in Israel.
Well, you do understand that dual citizenship is... It's my understanding that's pretty much a given if you have a direct. Now, I know I'm going to get this wrong, so hopefully somebody will correct me. But The dual citizenship is not that uncommon where it concerns Israel and Americans who happen to be Jewish. It has to do with your family background. If your family was active in the establishment of the State of Israel or something, I'm not sure. But it's not all that uncommon. And it's pretty much like Rahm Emanuel, who is Obama's chief of staff. Rahm Emanuel has dual citizenship with Israel, and he also was in the IDF for a while. He was not in combat, but so many so I've been told. So many prominent Jews in America share the same kind of background. So it's not. I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm just saying it's not a great big, you know, deep, dark secret. You understand that?
Yeah, it sure seems to me like, though, that if you belong to one country, you owe your allegiance to that nation. You shouldn't hold a citizenship in another country.
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying at all. I think citizenship, though, in a certain country has its downside because it's almost like citizenship inside a certain religion. As long as there are these kinds of divisions, we are going to have war and hate and destruction and murder. You know, we always don't. Are you still there, Boyd?
Yeah.
Okay. We you know, I guess it goes back to cave dwellers. We just don't trust the people live in the cave a little bit further down the mountain, you know. So maybe what we ought to do is sneak down there at night with our antelope bone weapons and kill the bastards. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed too much in a couple million years. We still want to move down the hill and under the cover of night and kill the bastards. And that doesn't make any difference if we're Christians wanting to kill Muslims or Muslims wanting to kill Jews or Americans wanting to kill Afghans or Afghans wanting to kill, you know what I mean? I'm just tired of the whole damn thing. I could just choke.
Yeah, it just seems to me that Israel has too much
well, it does.
Weight in forming our foreign policy.
Oh, way too much. Way too much influence in what we do. And that's it's a holdover from the massive guilt that the U.S. felt as a result of what happened to the Jews of Europe during World War II. Guilt that is deserved, and also the realization, I think, that Israel at the time was going to be our only ally in the Middle East. So that, you know, there's just so much that goes into it. But I think I think maybe it's time to reevaluate. Long past time to reevaluate the single side that the U.S. always takes in the Middle East, and change it to something that, if not. I'm not advocating go anti-Israel, but for God's sake, at least be a little bit even-handed. But that's never going to happen, Boyd, and you know it as well as I know it. It's just not going to happen. We will back Israel until some of these crazy Christians in the United States are convinced that Jesus really isn't going to come, and then I don't know.
When will Jesus bring the pork chops?
Well, there you go. All right, Boyd. Thanks, man. I appreciate what you had to say. I hear you loud and clear, pal. We'll be right back. Hey, got a couple open lines. You don't want to talk? Oh, to hell with you, then. We'll play infomercials. The number is 877-996-2556. People sleeping in their shoes. There's a warning sign on the road ahead. There's a lot of people saying we'd be better off dead. Don't feel like Satan, but you have to live. So I try to forget it any way I can. Get my rocket in the free world. Keep my rocket in the free world. Keep my rocket in the free world.
right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
But my family was gone.
What are you playing in there? What are you smoking in there? 21 past the hour. You like the Pretenders? George in Oregon has a response to what Rachel said in her monologue the other night when she was winding up a program about all that Obama has done, and she mentioned the canceling of the F-22 program. George in Oregon writes, the F-22 program wasn't exactly canceled, but the production will be limited to 187 aircraft. The last to be delivered in 2012. That will save us some money, tens of billions at least. The F-35 program is currently eating up the budget with huge overruns. I'd like to see something happen with that. But I guess something is definitely better than nothing, George in Oregon. So Rachel was close, but no cheroot. And Michael in Roswell also is... I think the point of this is to take Rachel's point of view a little bit to task. Michael writes, compared to what he needed to do, Obama's been pretty pokey. The Bushies were in high gear by this time in their first term. Obama first needed to undo a lot of what Bush and Cheney did and a lot more beside that. He didn't push hard on an effective stimulus. As Treasury people found new ways to help the banks on top of what the Bushes promised, Guantanamo's still there. Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan just as bad as it ever was. He actively worked to diminish the health care bill. He did the same thing with financial reform and is now, through Obama for America, claiming that they're the toughest financial reform since the Great Depression, which is demonstrably untrue. He has actually been expanding the Constitution crushing that began under Bush and Cheney. He's expanded the war into Pakistan and Yemen. Net neutrality is very likely going down the tubes, in part because Obama has said almost nothing about it. Kagan was not the best choice for the Supreme Court, not by a long shot. His answer to the disaster in the Gulf was to pretty much depend on a motley league of educated gentlemen, none of whom seemed to know anything about the nuts and bolts of deep water oil drilling. And we're now almost 70 days into that horror. Ain't impressive, to my mind, especially compared to what needed to be done. Michael. So, some differing opinion on the efficacy of the Obama administration to this point. I tend to... come down on the side of what I said Friday night. I just don't really believe that Obama has been all that effective. He's gotten some fingernail holds on some stuff, but I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take that point of view. Jonathan is in Malvern, PA. Hello, Jonathan.
Yeah. I just like, why, if our numbers are so thin already with the military and they've got the, you know, the, whatchamacallit, where you have to re-enlist or something like that, like, why would they stretch it even further by going to Iran right now?
Well,
why would they put American troops at more risk?
Well, I don't think any of the war planners ever consider American troops, but you might have missed the first hour of the program. I mentioned that for the first time since we've had an all-volunteer force, and that goes back a number of years, all four branches of service and reserve units have met their quotas, and they have more people than they can use. So the military is once again being more selective. There was a time during the Bush years when very few people were joining, and the military reduced the standards. They would take people with jail records or people who were stupid where it concerned the tests that you have to take, the written tests, all of that has changed. And the reason it has changed, according to this retired lieutenant colonel who used to work within the recruitment division, he said, because the economy, I'm paraphrasing, because the economy's in the tank and all these high school people are graduating, there are no jobs, they can't afford college, what the hell is left? The
military. Have we stopped the stop loss?
No, they're still using people on second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh deployments, but I think that's going to stop soon. Don't forget, you have all these new young Americans who are willing to go die and be grievously wounded for corporate America, not for the defense of this country, but for corporate America, and it takes a while to brainwash them and train them to the point where they will be ready replacements for these people who have served four or five deployments. So it's going to take a while to get them trained and get them into their specialized field, and then send them over to have half their heads shot off, or to come back in a box. So it's going to take a while. But the deployment or the recruitments are up, Jonathan. They're doing just fine. And of course, as far as I'm concerned, that was part of the overall plan: destroy the economy, just butcher it. And then you'll have all these people to choose from to teach how to go fight for corporate America. Thanks, Jonathan. Got a boogie. We'll be right back.
Stop this madness. Stop the killing. Stop the suffering and the pain. So I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill another mother.
My worst day ever?
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malone.
It is 25 before the hour. What else did I have here? There was another. Oh, the Gulf News in the Persian Gulf News is also reporting that attack on Iran seems to be in the works. All right, back to your phone calls. Tom is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey, Tom.
How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, okay. Just watching the rubber band stretch farther and farther. God.
Yeah, really, really.
I have a very good friend. He's a double PhD in physics, and he's been a buddy for about 25 years. Mm-hmm. And lives here and goes back and forth. I think it's one of his brothers is head of the oil ministry, and he knows all the physicists, and I asked him a bunch of times. I said, you know, do they have nuclear weapons? He said, no. He said, they don't have it. It's mm-hmm. way too difficult to. But the other thing, too, is, you know, you don't hear it mentioned in the news. I've asked him, you know, a bunch of times. You know, nobody knows what they're going to do, but they have a 5-million-man army. They have F-18. It's not like attacking Iraq.
Oh, no.
Afghanistan.
Right.
I have a couple friends in Afghanistan who aren't in the army. One's a retired SEAL and the other is an interpreter. He's an Afghan, but he got hired because we blew his mother's house up. She survived the Russians and the British, and then he had to move her here, so then he had to take a job interpreting to support his. That's just, it's just disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
If we attack Iran and they decide to fight, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it because you know what Israel's going to do.
Well, yeah, but also there is the fact that the largest expat population of Iranians is in Los Angeles.
And, yeah, and my friend. friend. He's got
well, not just Los Angeles, but Southern California, and these a lot of these people, sure, they're here because of the religious craziness over there and the mullahs and Ahmadinejad, but still, it's their country.
Right, and the other thing is he knows, you know, he's a scientist, but he's number one in the world what he does if you went on the internet, but I'm not gonna. But so he knows scientists all over the United States, all over the world in physics, and you know, one of his buddies, he got his PhD from the in the United States. He's been working at NASA 20 years, and there's 60,000 scientists in the United States from Iran, and I know a lot of Iranians are the sweetest people, and my best friend in Europe retired from head of the NATO wing as a fighter pilot. He's 78. All over the world, my sister in Italy, she and her kids have been there. Everyone I talk to, they're the nicest people. It's the most beautiful country, but I think, well, that's why we want to attack it, because it's too beautiful. We can't stand that in America. God.
Yeah.
But 60,000 scientists, you know, if we bomb their mothers, I know the way the Iranians are. They're very close people, and I wonder what some of these guys are going to do. I mean, it's insanity.
Yeah.
It's really insanity, but... I don't know. Obama, he didn't have a father, and I wish he did sometimes. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah, I hear you. I understand.
Anyway, to be so negative today. I paint pictures and play music for a living, so I try to keep myself floating.
Yeah,
Anyway, wonderful to talk to you again. I listen to you all the time unless I can't because... it's just too much.
Yeah, well, there are nights when I don't want to go on the air because it's too much.
And when are you going to come back to Madison, the Berry Bar?
I don't know. Whenever I get invited,
I'm inviting you right now. Get a group together and we'll play music before you come out.
Yeah, that would be great. But just contact the mic and tell them. They have to do it.
The Barrymore. I have so many friends. Everybody I know in Madison loves it.
Well, do it. Just
call. Well, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, call up to Mike tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Okay, it'd be great, man.
There are at least 10 of you in Madison who want me to come up there. Hey, thanks, Tom. I got a boogie. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, we need to go to, we need to go there. Warren is calling from Revere, Massachusetts. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Mike. What I called about is a little bit of a departure from this Middle Eastern madness that we're looking like we're getting into.
Sure.
But I wanted to ask you. I spent the weekend listening to a lot of CBC.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you what you thought about this G20 business and these crazy protests and stuff.
I think for, you know, the G20 to have meetings is ridiculous in the first place. Nothing is ever decided. It's like having meetings on global warming. Nothing ever gets done. I don't advocate violence at all, but I certainly advocate protests. The problem is that nations like the G20, when they get together, they don't tolerate any kind of protest. They don't tolerate any kind of demonstration. And as a result, you know, that's a challenge to young people. A lot of young people look at that and they'll say, what do you mean you don't tolerate it? And as a result, you do get some violence. The violence is, for the most part, gratuitous because nothing is going to change. I'm not going to condemn, I condemn violence, but I'm not going to condemn people who lose control when it's very obvious that the heads of these 20 nations or the finance ministers or whoever's there are there ostensibly to figure out how to keep the scam going, how to, continue to rip off the citizens of all these different countries who try to continue to figure out ways to keep people from saying enough and rising up and overthrowing some of these repressive regimes. And just about every regime in the G20 could be identified by people within their own countries as being repressive. So that's kind of my take on it, Warren.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to advocate violence either, but I understand the anger. And all I heard come out of that G20 business, and I think they had the G8 too, was more gobbledygook about austerity measures.
Right.
It's like it seems to be the prevalent thing that they want to, you know, push on every country, this crazy deficit reduction concept that, you know, let's cut the throats of the first world poor and make a bunch of false promises to the third world poor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it sounds to me.
Well,
I just wanted your take on it.
Yeah, I you and I are probably not that far apart on the issue. If you have a chance, go to nytimes.com and read Paul Krugman's column from today on the op-ed page, because he addresses that very issue, what we're just talking about. I think you ought to, you know, take a look at it. Just go to nytimes.com and read Krugman's column from today.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. All right, man. Thank you. I appreciate it, Warren.
Yep.
All right, sir. Take care. Yeah, the G20 or the G8 or whatever the hell it, you know, it, back when it was the G8 or G4 or whatever it was when it first started out, the sole purpose of that is for these uber capitalist societies to get together and figure out how they're going to carve up the rest of the world and make sure that they get all the resources, at least the resources that they don't dump into the jungles or pollute the sea with. I mean, just a collection of predators. The G20 is not about economic democracy or even economic parity. It's about exploitation. That's all it ever has been about. Come on, everybody knows this, right? I mean, you do know that, don't you? That the G20, the G10, the G12, the G8, whatever, however this group is expanded now to include ever more alpha wannabe predators who just want to continue to eat at the corpse before there's nothing left to eat. That has nothing whatsoever to do with any kind of economic justice or job-saving ideas or job creation ideas. No. It is how does capitalism, at these meetings, this is how does capitalism continue to defend itself even though it's on its deathbed? What can capitalism do to make sure that some thief in the night doesn't slip into the bedchambers and put a shiv right between the fifth and sixth rib? That's all those meetings are about. Honest to God. Before the hour, back to your phone calls here. Steven is in Burbank. Hey, Steven.
Oh, hello, Mike.
How are you?
As good as you are, only maybe sometimes not as good, maybe sometimes better, you know?
Sorry I asked.
No, well, you know, I'm trying to change society one person at a time.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
if you
okay.
If you fall victim to it occasionally, it's just force of habit on my part.
That's okay.
So anyway, this Obama thing, you know, it's been a year and a half, and I walk over the bridges here, and I can see rooftops. And I'm thinking, where are the solar panels? and then I heard some rambling about racial, you know, and I don't know if she, I don't get TV or any of that, but Employee Free Choice Act, you know, let's get some unions happening.
Right.
Where did that go?
Yeah.
And then looking at Iran, we all know that there's a strong pro-democracy movement happening in Iran from the citizenry, from the ground up. And Iran is a relatively, I guess you could maybe say it's an industrialized first world country,
mm-hmm.
of 75 million. And, you know, if you think of real democracy in that kind of a situation, what would that do to the power structure?
Yeah.
So maybe that could answer some questions.
Well, I just hope that these reports are only about saber rattling and not unsheathing sabers, so to speak, because... an attack on Iran, I don't think there's any question that the escalation from that, the escalation may not be rapid because we don't have the Cold War alliances that we had for 50 or 60 years in place, but the escalation from that will be slow and it will become surreal. If we attack Iran, I don't think there will be... even a modicum of peace on this planet for centuries.
Well,
I was going to say, that's true. I read something over the weekend. In the past 5,000 years of actual contemporary recorded history, 5,000 years, there have been 200 years without war. And, of course, those 200 years were not strung together. It might have been 10 years here, 20 years there, 25 over there. But when you can think of that, 5,000 years of human history and only 200 absent war, I mean, what the hell are we sitting here talking about this stuff? Why not just forget about it?
Let's talk happy then. If Blue is listening, I hope that he makes mention next time he calls if he is or is not a surfer.
All right.
Because I don't get to the net much, you know, and I don't know if you could forward me to him because, you know, everybody knows I'm crazy.
Well, I asked him if he had email. I said, would you send me an email address? And so far I haven't gotten one. But there's a lot of people that listen to this program who would like to have some direct, you know, internet conversation or email conversation with Blue. I don't know if he's a surfer or not. I'll certainly ask him. You are, right?
I used to be. I haven't been in the water since, like, 1977.
Oh, my God.
And if you go to my Facebook page, you can see a photograph that my dad took a picture of me in Malibu. I think I was 15 years old. 16.
I'll be damned.
Anyway.
I'll ask him.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome, boss.
All right. Take care. Oops. Take care. I know you were saying hang in there. Take care. Oh, God. Surfing. Yeah, I showed you those pictures of me in 1965. Jacksonville Beach, Florida. And I was trying to live that kind of life, and the Army was on me like white on rice. Wanted me to go kill the Vietnamese. But I still have just a couple of photos of surfing days. Of my surfing days, they were short-lived. Not that much by any means. Maybe 6 months when I lived at the beach on Jacksonville Beach, and it was I loved it. It was great until I got stung by the man of war, and then it wasn't great because that hurt like hell and left me with headache, diarrhea, nausea, and a fear of going back out and hanging out. You know, about 100 yards offshore, 200 yards offshore, waiting for the waves. But it was great fun. You know, that was Beach Boys and Jan and Dean and Beach Baby, Give Me Your Hand. But I'm sure I was not like Stephen. Stephen was a real surfer because he was in Southern California. You couldn't be a real surfer and be in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. You could only be a pretend surfer. Robert is in Voorhees, New Jersey. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm a first-time caller.
Well, welcome. Welcome aboard.
I've been listening to you for many years. What I wanted to say is talk about all the recent Supreme Court rulings, like this gun law, and for instance, the unemployment bill that was preventing people from collecting that unemployment. What seems to be going on to me is that these Republicans are trying to cause mass chaos.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. Hey, Robert, I have some bad news, man. We are flat out of time. I've got 10 seconds here, and I don't want to rush you through what I know you want to say. I'm just going to ask you if you could call another night, maybe this week, you know, during the show when I got time, because I like you know, I like to hear from people who are first time callers for real. So thanks a lot, pal. It's just that we're out of time. We're flat out of time. Thanks, Robert. Yeehaw. I guess there's nothing left to say on this Monday night. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.